Out front next, Biden ramps up his attacks on Trump, the president going after him by name again and again. This is Trump rolls out the red carpet for a strongman who built a border wall, changed election law so he could win, and he's calling out woke culture. Plus, the pressure campaign to use nukes. Putin's state TV ramping up its calls for a nuclear strike on the West as Russian forces have a new weapon in their arsenal that is already having devastating effects in Ukraine. And a quote, disaster, bizarre. That's how some Republicans are describing Senator Katie Britt's response to Biden's State of the Union. Let's go out front. Good evening, I'm Erica Hill, in for Aaron Burnett. Out front tonight, breaking news, Biden turning up the heat on Trump, riding the momentum from his State of the Union address just moments ago, wrapping up a visit to the key battleground state of Pennsylvania, making it clear he is not afraid to take on Trump.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans are trying to take away our freedoms. Donald Trump. He came to office determined to overturn Roe v. Wade. But Donald Trump has announced he wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Donald Trump enacted a $2 trillion tax cut when he was president, overwhelmingly benefiting the very wealthy.
The president fired up tonight, pointing out the stark differences he sees between the two, differences that are on full display at this hour, actually. Biden campaigning there as Trump spent time today with Hungary's far-right authoritarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, inviting the controversial leader to Mar-a-Lago for about an hour and a half. The hard-charging, brash autocrat has described migrants as poison and Muslim invaders. He's railed against his country becoming one of mixed races, cracked down on LGBT content on TV and in schools, stifled the press, even changed election laws so he could win. Now, for years, Orban was shunned by both Republicans and Democrats, but increasingly, Trump and the more extreme wing of the GOP have come to embrace him.
Respected all over Europe. Probably, like me, a little bit controversial, but that's okay.
Some people don't like him because he's too strong. It's nice to have a strong man running your country.
Nice to have a strong man running your country. The former president has embraced strongmen all over the world, from Putin to Xi to Kim Jong-un. So how is that how that he would perhaps like to run this country? Well, Biden not missing a chance to slam today's meeting.
You know who he's meeting with today and down in Mar-a-Lago? Orban of Hungary, who stated flatly he doesn't think democracy works. He's looking for dictatorship.
We have our team standing by. MJ Lee is with President Biden in Pennsylvania. Kristen Holmes near Mar-a-Lago with former President Trump. MJ, let's start with you. So you were there at that Biden campaign event just now where he came out firing against Donald Trump by name tonight, also hitting abortion, health care, taxes, and, of course, that meeting the former president had with Viktor Orban. Is this a reset moment for the president?
Well, Erica, I can tell you that last night was certainly the most energized that I have seen White House officials, campaign officials, and supporters of the president. I think for many of his supporters, they saw a performance from President Biden that they had badly wanted to see. They saw clarity and vigor and energy, and they are very much hoping that the president will take that onto the road. We obviously just saw the kickoff of his post-State of the Union tour here in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and we know that in the coming days, he is going to be traveling to other important battleground states like New Hampshire, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin. You know, last night, as political as the president's remarks were, we never heard the president actually referring to his predecessor, Donald Trump, by name. That rule obviously has gone out the window. We saw, in fact, some of the most harshest and starkest criticisms of Donald Trump from President Biden to date in these remarks. And when you listen to the president talking about Donald Trump, sometimes you almost get the sense that he is almost in disbelief about Donald Trump and sort of the country and vision that he represents. Take a listen.
Did you ever think we'd be in a situation where we talk to each other like we talk these days? Why, you see things that we see that no matter how tense things were, and they were really tough in other parts of our history, when you ride down the street and there was a Trump banner with a FU on it and a 6-year-old kid putting up his middle finger. Did you ever think you'd hear people talk the way they do? Look, it demeans who we are. That's not America.
And Erica, last night we saw protesters near Capitol Hill forcing the president's motorcade to actually change its route. And I just want to point out that we see that kind of anger about the Israel war in so many other places every day all across the country. Just here, coming into this event earlier today, we spoke with a protester who said she is here because she wants the president to call for a permanent ceasefire, obviously not a position that he has taken. And in fact, he told reporters earlier today that he thinks it's going to be tough to even get a deal for a temporary ceasefire by Ramadan. Erica.
MJ there traveling with the president. I want to bring in now Kristen Holmes, who's at Mar-a-Lago, of course, where former President Trump is hosting Viktor Orban, the authoritarian leader from Hungary. So the two met, Kristen, for, I guess, about an hour and a half. What do we know about that conversation? What happened behind closed doors?
Well, Erica, we're still trying to get a readout. We were told that they were going to give us some sort of briefing on what the two talked about. We were also told we were going to get some sort of images from this meeting. So far, we have absolutely nothing. I did talk to sources who said that they were still in the meeting. That's why we know the length of the meeting. But so far, that content has been kept under wraps. I'm still reaching out to sources as they kind of disperse after that meeting. Again, it was just at 5, so broke up rather recently. But the interesting context around this meeting, obviously, we heard Biden talking about Orban, so it's not surprising that the White House did not issue any sort of formal invitation to Orban. But also, Orban did not reach out to anyone in the White House or the Biden administration to sit down for a meeting. He is still a world leader, as is the President of the United States, Joe Biden, and yet he is here meeting with the former president. One thing to note is that Donald Trump's not just a former president. He is also the presumptive Republican nominee, and he could be president again. And this really gives us some kind of insight into how Donald Trump might align himself in the world stage and what leaders he might stand by. As you noted in your intro, you talked about all of the things that Viktor Orban has said that he stands for. But one thing you didn't note is how much he praises former President Donald Trump. He has praised him on his immigration stance. He has said over and over again that Putin would not have invaded Ukraine if Trump was still in the White House. That goes a very long way with the former president, that kind of loyalty and that kind of praise. So when you're talking about this meeting today, that might be something that pushed it into existence because of the fact that Donald Trump takes those kind of compliments so seriously. Erica?
Appreciate the reporting. As always, Kristen, thank you. Out front now, Ested Herndon, Basil Smichael, and Stephanie Grisham. Good to have all of you with us. So, Ested, as we're looking at where we sit right now, last night there was a lot of counting of my predecessor. Now we were counting the times that Joe Biden said Donald Trump. Going after him directly, looking at what we've seen in the last not even 24 hours, how has that changed this campaign?
I think it marks a new chapter of the campaign. I think after Super Tuesday, you have the majority of delegates out. You clearly have the White House say that they can now zero in on who they know their opponent's going to be. And there's a reason they're doing it at this time. Joe Biden knows that when this election is about him and the referendum on him, they're on weaker position. When it is about Donald Trump, the White House feels better about that. So I think you see both last night and today as a kind of show of the message. But I think when the president's biggest political liability is age, the performance also matters. Mm-hmm. And what you saw yesterday was a Joe Biden that had his Wheaties, right? Had was really kind of making a show to reassure Democrats that he has the energy to be the person leading them going forward. But I also think it's a shot across the bow to Republicans. And if they get the Joe Biden that they had last night in the summer and into the fall, that's going to be someone who gives the Democrats confidence. I don't think it's just about the momentum directly from last night, but if that is the person Democrats will see consistently through the summer and the fall.
So it's about the person and about the momentum together, right? And whether or not that can be sustained for the next 8 months. Is this the Joe Biden that we will see for the next 8 months?
It better be. It better be, because that's the Joe Biden that can win and will win. And as his point, it's amazing to me yesterday using that moment to take a shot across the bow with the justices sitting in the crowd saying, you made this decision, now you are going to understand the political and electoral power of women. So what's important, I think, for Joe Biden going forward and the Democrats is not to tiptoe around all of these issues that are mobilizing Democrats when they go to the polls. Talk directly to them. Talk about how Republicans are responsible for the abrogation of your rights and how Democrats are going to gain those back. So I love the energy. I think there's a tremendous amount of momentum coming off of last night, but we got to continue to see it. It's got to be consistent. But I think if we see that Joe Biden in November, it's a great opportunity for Democrats to win.
Looking at the other side here, the presumptive Republican nominee, Stephanie, this meeting today with Viktor Orban and Donald Trump, I know you had been in the room right, when Trump had meetings with strongmen like Orban. Do you think it's an exaggeration that he wants to use Orban's playbook in many ways?
Absolutely not. You know, hearing Kristen say that the meeting has lasted at least an hour and a half just tells you something right there. Donald Trump has the attention span of a gnat. And the fact that he's sitting in there with a dictator shows you that this is what interests him. I have sat in many bilateral meetings with world leaders, and he always looked forward to speaking with President Erdogan of Turkey or President Xi of China, of course, Putin. And, you know, it's funny, you played that soundbite where Trump said that, you know, that he's such a strong man and you need a strong man leading your country. They're strong men against their own country, against the people of their own country. I think that's something that should be thought about there. And I think you're looking at a second Donald Trump term, in fact, in terms of he wants to be strong, that he can be tough with his own people, not be good to our allies, not be good to our people, and not to, you know, defend people like in Ukraine. He wants to be a dictator.
You know, Biden was asked about today whether he was worried about Trump's meeting with Orban. He said, if I'm not, you should be. I said, how much of the GOP do you think would feel the same way as Joe Biden? How much is perhaps totally okay with this meeting happening at Mar-a-Lago and would like to see more of it?
This is a legitimate split in the GOP. You do have a kind of larger wing of the party that is kind of uncomfortable with the ways that the Trump and MAGA base have embraced authoritarian leaders, have rallied around figures who are not American allies. And so I do think you're going to see Joe Biden try to make that message, as we saw in the midterm, to appeal to people who he would say are not MAGA Republicans, but maybe more traditional Republicans, and say, you know, I'm the person who kind of stands with allies. I think this also goes back to Joe Biden's point about flipping age to a positive. He's going to say that he has the experience, the know-how, that these are the people that he knows, and there's a way that you can trust him over Donald Trump. But Donald Trump is not haphazard when it comes to this issue. He has consistently liked these type of leaders, and he has promised in his policy planks for 2024 to model that kind of authoritarian government. And so I'm saying it is not just a personal attachment between him and these authoritarians. He wants to mimic them. He is envious of that power, and he has promised in his voters and policy planks to replicate that if he was to come back in the second term.
Baz, I want to get your take on something else that happened yesterday, sort of carrying into today and where it will go from here. As you know, the president is really struggling with a lot of younger voters in his party, more progressive voters. There's a lot of upset over how the situation in Israel is being handled. There was this moment last night that was actually caught. He was speaking with a senator. Take a listen.
I told him, baby, I'm a piece of
So today, Biden was asked specifically about those comments. Here's his response.
I didn't say that in the speech.
After the speech?
You guys eavesdropping on things.
This is not the president's first rodeo.
That's right.
He knows there are a lot of mics around. There are a lot of cameras. Right. Do you think he wanted that to get picked up? Did he want that out there?
Well, he should have wanted it out there if he didn't, because I think it shows to an extent that he's hearing from those young voters. And I actually want to center those young voters because I teach a lot of them. And there are a lot of voters that say they don't want to vote in this election because of his stand with Israel. And, you know, it is concerning. It should be concerning not just to Biden, but to the Democratic Party, because as this country becomes more diverse, younger and younger voters are going to be much more attuned to what's happening in their home country. Mm-hmm. So when we don't usually vote on foreign policy, you will start to see a lot of that, a lot more of that going forward. So I do think it's very important. And just to connect it to the last question, it's interesting because Barack Obama in 2008 went to Berlin when he was running for office. And he had this amazing speech where he talked to young people about the ways in which they pushed for democracy, defeated communism, and were really supporting sort of this movement that was happening internationally. Very different from what Donald Trump is doing and has been doing. I'm not saying Joe Biden needs to go to Germany. But I am saying that he needs to find a way to connect to young voters in particular and talk to them about how they are the future, that they can take the United States in a direction that Donald Trump is sorely trying to run away from. And I don't know that he's been able to do that yet, but I still think there's time.
All right. We got 8 minutes. We'll be watching that. Stephanie, I'm curious. Donald Trump has now been pushing, didn't want anything to do with debates with his fellow Republicans, but has really been pushing for a debate with the president. How do you think that would play out if that were to happen?
I think that Trump would, of course, make it about belittling Biden in any way he can, making fun of him instead of talking policy. You know, I would say if I were Biden's people, I would say, why debate him? He just lies all the time. However, I spent 6 years nonstop with Donald Trump. And I'll tell you what, if Biden does decide to debate Trump, I would sure like to prep President Biden.
Well, we'll see if he's watching it, if he takes you up on that offer. Stephanie has said, Basil, good to have all of you with us tonight. Thank you. Out front next, Trump pays up, the former president forking over nearly $100 million. And he still has another massive $450 million-plus judgment looming. So where's the cash going to come from? Plus, she may be a rising star in the Republican Party, but her response to Biden's State of the Union address isn't going over well with some of her fellow Republicans.
Right now, our commander-in-chief is not in command.
And it is 10 years to the day that Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 vanished. Tonight, are we any closer to finding out what happened to that plane?
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight, Donald Trump pays up, the former president posting a nearly $92 million bond as he appeals the judgment against him in the E. Jean Carroll defamation case. Soon, he's also going to need to come up with a whole lot more cash. In just 17 days, he has to pay the $454 million penalty and the Trump org fraud case. There are looming questions, though, tonight about whether Donald Trump even has that much money. After he claimed in a deposition last year he had some $400 million in cash on hand. Paula Reed is out front. So, Paula, is there any way at all for Donald Trump to get out of putting up all of this money?
Well, Erica, Trump has tried and failed to delay this massive payment. He even offered up a portion of what he owed, a $100 million bond. But even that was rejected. He has now appealed to a full panel of appellate judges as a last-ditch attempt to delay this. But the clock is ticking. And until that bond is posted, interest is accruing at a rate of nearly $115,000 a day. And look, if he does not come up with this money, the attorney general in New York has made it clear she will seize his assets. Now, it's also interesting that this money is due on March 25th, because that is the same day that the first criminal trial against former President Trump gets underway in New York. And it's a reminder that in addition to these two civil judgments, he also faces mounting legal fees that he owes in these four criminal trials that he is facing. Now, one question out there is whether the RNC will help him. Now, this week, his daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, along with another Trump loyalist, both took over the RNC. Now, one of his senior advisors has said they do not intend to use the RNC to help pay Trump's legal expenses, but others had expected that the committee would help him once he became the party's nominee. But look, Erica, these money woes, they really undermine this long-projected image of a successful businessman with deep pockets who was always able to work the system to his benefit.
Yeah, appreciate it, Paula. Thank you. Joining me now to discuss, Ryan Goodman, OUTFRONT's legal expert, and Jonathan Greenberg, longtime investigative journalist who has covered Donald Trump and his finances for decades. and says Trump lied to him when he worked at Forbes to get on the Forbes 400 list. Good to have both of you with us, Ryan. As we look at this, and Paula just touched on this a bit, but given the fact that there are just over 2 weeks for Donald Trump to pay when it comes to this $454 million penalty, and it's not clear he has the cash, what ultimately happens if he can't pay?
If he can't pay, then the attorney general is going to kick into action pretty swiftly and start seizing his assets. That could be properties that he owns, and it could also be liquid assets mm-hmm. that he says he has in bank accounts. And she can reach beyond New York in order to do that by going into the courts of Florida and elsewhere.
And when you say pretty quickly, how quickly do you anticipate she would act?
Immediately.
Okay. Yeah. So as we watch for that, Jonathan, you've actually suggested you think the AG should go directly to his real estate partners now, get the ball rolling on those assets to put Trump essentially on defense. How would that work?
Well, the concept is, Aaron, is that instead of making, you know, where he does, you know, instead of playing defensively to enforce the state judgment, to take the offensive and cut Trump out of the deal. I believe that the art of collecting a penalty against Donald Trump is the art of cutting him out of the deal. Because as long as he is part of it, even when they seize the assets, let's say, you know, I don't believe he's going to have the money to pay the bond, it's going to be like, okay, so where are the financials so that we could talk to potential buyers? And in real estate, the best potential buyer is an existing partner in a building. And Trump has some very big, very deep pocketed partners, Bernardo Realty Trust, at 1290 Avenue of the Americas. He has, you know, $287 million in equity, Forbes estimates his there. Why not approach them and say, listen, we would like you to be ready on March 25th when we officially seize the assets because he hasn't paid his bond to make us an offer, to create a contract that says, contingent upon the appellate court not overturning the ruling, which is, by the way, pretty unlikely since it's a fairly bulletproof and well-considered judgment, what will you pay us for Trump's share of the equity? Because as long as you play this game of Trump, of like, he's in control, he's going to try to provide the financials or not, he's going to contest and drag his heels every step of the way, maybe it's time that Letitia James, who I think is probably the most, you know, the strongest prosecutor Trump has ever faced in his life, that she turns the tables on him and negotiates around him directly with the groups that could pay the money for the bond that needs to be enforced.
Be interesting to see if, in fact, she took that route. As we look at all of this, Ryan, would bankruptcy be an option here?
Actually not. So there's an exception to the bankruptcy rules that says that it can't apply to a debt that is owed through fraud. And so the judgment is all about fraud. It's like child support payments. Those also could not be discharged through bankruptcy. The person would still owe them. So that's not really an option here.
And Paula noted, you know, there are these questions about the RNC and whether some of that money could be used to pay his legal fees. His daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, who's now the co-chair, as of a few hours ago, mm-hmm. of the party, had said, well, you know, we think that people would expect this. It would be okay. Now, she said she's not sure what the legal ramifications mm-hmm. are, right? What are the regulations? Is that ever something that could happen?
Possibly. So there's been some commentary suggesting that it's off limits, that it wouldn't be illegal. It's actually not so clear. It's not so clear how the RNC would operate under the Federal Election Campaign Act. And that it also explains why there was a movement inside the RNC to try to get a resolution to pass to stop the payment, because obviously they think there are people inside the RNC who do not think it is illegal
right.
to do this.
As we watch for all of that, you know, Jonathan, you were on the receiving end of a fairly well-known call by this point from a John Barron years ago. Barron, of course, was Donald Trump himself posing as a publicist to falsely claim that Trump owned all of his father's assets. This was in an effort to inflate his net worth to make that Forbes 400 list. I want to play part of that conversation.
What's your first name, by the way?
John. Most of the assets have been consolidated to Mr. Trump, you know, because you have down Fred Trump. And I'd like to talk to you off the record, if I can, just to make your thing easier. I think you can really use Donald Trump now, and you can just consolidate. I think last year somebody showed me the article, and I think you had 200 and 200. And really, it's been pretty well consolidated now for the most part.
So much of Donald Trump's image is really tied to this idea of his wealth, of his success in business. How far, Jonathan, do you think he could go to keep the American people from discovering that he is not as rich, as wealthy as he has claimed?
I think he's far less wealthy than he has claimed. I think this is his Achilles heel. If you look at, You know, there was this. Funny, Eric. He was on once on a Comedy Central roast of him, and he said, "Say whatever you want about my family. Say whatever you want about appearance. Just don't make any jokes about me being worth less than I am, because he really is worth a lot less than he had. He's a lot less successful than he wants the world to be, and his properties don't produce" nearly as much income, which is why there's this cash squeeze and he's trying to negotiate $100 million when he has to come up with $450 million. How far he will go I think he's going to defy the court every step of the way. It's going to be make me do it, like a child saying, I'm not going to do it, make me do it. You can't make me do it. But I do believe that his Hail Mary might be money from a Russian oligarch or a loan from someone who he's friendly with. But the problem he has is that if he falls or goes down, any loans that he has collateralized against any of his other assets, you know, are likely to go down too. And so it's not a particularly wise business decision. And he doesn't have that many friends.
Jonathan, Ryan, really good to have you both here tonight. Thank you. Out front next, Russia using a dangerous new weapon in Ukraine as Putin's state media goes all out calling for nuclear war. And the U.S. military now making UFO detection kits after a sharp rise in the sightings of unidentified flying objects. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of nukes. Russian state TV can't stop talking about using nuclear weapons against the West, even discussing the idea during a weather report.
Владимир Рудольфович, вот сегодня как раз идеальный.
Today the weather is ideal for conducting nuclear strikes against NATO countries.
Все эти радиоактивные.
The radioactive clouds will travel towards those countries that are sending arms and mercenaries to fight against our army.
It's somewhat unbelievable, except maybe it's not. It all comes as Russia beefs up its arsenal with bombs that can fly. Fred Plykin is out front.
Massive explosions as the Russians were driving Ukrainian forces out of Avdiivka on the Eastern Front. After their retreat, Kiev's ground troops saying Vladimir Putin's air force has become a lot more effective thanks to a special weapon.
The enemy used their aircraft a lot, attacking with cab bombs. Before they advance, they clean up the area ahead of them with cab bombs.
CAB stands for correctable air bomb, old unguided bombs retrofitted with wings that unfold and a precision guidance kit using Russia's version of GPS.
The impact has been to give Russia additional firepower, particularly very heavy firepower, so it's a lot more explosive than an artillery shell or a rocket. So essentially, almost a kind of DIY style version of an American glide bomb kit.
You can see the bombs in flight here, their wings already extended. The wing kits allow the Russians to release the bombs further away from the front lines and out of range of Ukraine's short-distance air defense systems. The bombs then glide dozens of miles to their targets. With devastating effects, the Ukrainians say, the Russians dropping large quantities of bombs weighing between 500 and 3,000 pounds, able to annihilate even hardened Ukrainian positions.
Their goal is not only to hit our frontline positions, but guided glide bombs are also flying further behind our defenders to hit rear command posts, rear supplies, ammunition, and so on.
The aerial bombs are huge. This is a medium-sized one that didn't explode when dropped on a house near the Eastern Front. And the Russians say they're just getting started. Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu saying Moscow will drastically ramp up production of the wing and guidance kits on a recent visit to the factory making them.
It's a form of munition that Russia has potentially in very large quantities, and it enables their fighter aircraft, which so far have been fairly ineffective in the war, to contribute really heavy firepower to the ongoing Russian push against Ukrainian lines.
The Ukrainians say the only way they can stop Putin's glide bomb blitz is with more long-range air defense systems. And they hope soon with U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets that could help push Russian aircraft even further away from the front lines.
And Erica, the Ukrainians say they have managed to actually shoot down some of those Russian jets dropping those glide bombs, but they also say the only weapon they currently have capable of achieving that is the U.S.-made Patriot surface-to-air missile systems. Now, of course, they need a lot of Patriot missiles to do that, but right now getting additional missiles is a problem because the funding for that remains held up by Republican House leadership. Erica?
Fred, appreciate the reporting as always. Thank you. Major General Spider Marks is out front now at the Magic Wall. General, good to see you as always. So as we saw in Fred's report there, these glider bombs, they seem like a huge boon for Russia, a major vulnerability for Ukraine. Do you see them reshaping the war?
I don't know that they're going to reshape the war. I mean, we talk a lot about these potential game changers, and let's be frank with each other. Each additional capability is an additive in terms of a very specific function. But until you can fight as a total force, an air-land battle, a kind of its three-dimensional fighting force, nothing's really a game changer. So I'm not sanguine it's going to change the fight. However, it's significant. Mm-hmm. Let's go through what that looks like. This is the area that we just saw. Let me run through that video again, and you can see here comes the glider bomb into the target, quite effective. The key thing there is that these bombs allow the Russians to provide additional offset. If the target is, in fact, here in this particular video, Russians might be able to release that munitions from someplace back here. The Ukrainians currently don't have sufficient capacity to go after those either launch locations or to interdict with air defense capabilities back here from where they're going to be launched.
It's a tough picture. All of this, as we know, that Ukraine is revising its defense strategy. Russia's kind of gaining steam at this point. How are they revising that strategy?
Well, very much so. The Ukrainians were incapable of really achieving some success with the offensive that we all talked about over the course of the last 6 to 7 months. That did not happen to the level that everybody was anticipating, irrespective of NATO's support to Ukraine. So it's a very difficult, difficult fight. But the defense can achieve some great success. So what's happening currently right now along the front is the Russians are probing in multiple locations to try to see what the weak point might be. That's to the Ukrainian advantage, because when you move it up into a little closer area, if you look what Ukraine has done, they've backed their defensive line back to there. Russians now are still trying to penetrate in multiple locations. Well, the defense has an advantage, generally what we call the ratio of 3-1. And if the Russians are trying to probe in a multiple locations, the Ukrainians can let them achieve some tactical success. For example, they get a little bit of a penetration here. The Russians continue to commit to this area. And then the Ukrainians, if they can read it appropriately, can then cut that off with forces from either direction. That's the intent here.
That is the intent. We'll be watching. Spider Marks, always appreciate you being with us. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Eric.
Out front next, Republican Senator Katie Britt cashing in on her rebuttal to President Biden's State of the Union address. Despite that rebuttal, leaving some in her own party baffled.
This is the United States of America, and it is past time, in my opinion, that we start acting like it.
Plus, 10 years ago tonight, we broke what would become one of aviation's, frankly, one of the world's biggest mysteries.
And we have breaking news right now. Malaysia Airlines confirms it has lost contact with a plane carrying 227 passengers and 12 crew members.
So a decade later, what happened to MH370?
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. Join me, Philip Nguyen, a scholar of Vietnamese-American culture, and the cast and crew as we discuss the making of this historic series. Subscribe now to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and stream HBO's The Sympathizer starting April 14th exclusively on Max.
Tonight, Katie Britt doubling down. The senator from Alabama, now closer to being a household name after her rebuttal to President Biden's State of the Union address, is fundraising off of her speech, asking donors to help her, quote, send the Biden agenda into the ash heap of history. This, as that very same speech is being panned as bizarre, a disaster, even parody level terrible. And keep in mind, Those three moments I just talked about, those comments all came from fellow Republicans. Senlin Sarfati is out front.
Our commander-in-chief is not in command.
Senator Katie Britt's State of the Union response.
It's been a minute since Joe Biden pumped gas.
Setting off a flurry of opinions, even some within her own party, saying her delivery was distracting, overshadowing the message. Critics calling it too theatrical, too dramatic.
To think about what the American dream can do across just one generation, in just one lifetime, it's truly breathtaking.
With her kitchen location projecting the wrong optics.
If I may paraphrase President George W. Bush, that was some weird stuff, man. The whole kitchen setting and the kind of the very labored and breathy, and quavering voice.
Even as some came to her defense.
I thought she did very well. And she's a mom. She's a housewife. She's around people in a young age.
Senator Britt won office only 2 years ago, becoming the first woman elected to represent Alabama in the Senate.
This race has never been about me. It has always been about Alabama.
She previously worked on Capitol Hill for years, rising to chief of staff for Alabama Senator Richard Shelby.
I am a mama on a mission. And the two reasons that Wesley and I chose to jump in this race are standing right beside us.
Her husband is a former NFL football player, and they have two kids, a lifelong Alabamian, once Alabama's junior miss.
I've been dancing since I was 18 months old, and I love it.
The performative nature of giving the State of the Union rebuttal is notoriously tricky after the energy of the president's big speech. The immediate alternative can come off as hollow, staid, and has led to some politically devastating moments that can haunt the political futures of those politicians for years. Like Senator Marco Rubio's sudden thirst in his 2013 rebuttal speech.
Nothing has frustrated me more than false choices like the one the president laid out tonight.
Parodied and mocked.
Where's the water?
Can you not see?
Further?
It's never that far away.
Further?
It's right in front of you.
So too was then Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal.
Good evening and happy Mardi Gras.
Then Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius mocked for her blank stare. Congressman Joe Kennedy, for what looked like drool, later had to clarify as just too much chapstick. And Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann's speech remembered for her off-putting focus off camera.
2 years ago, when Barack Obama became president.
So there has certainly been a lot of talk about Senator Britt today. Have she or her office responded to any of the criticism that's out there?
Yeah, Eric, no response yet from her, but I did ask one of her aides about all this criticism. And interestingly, they immediately juxtaposed her giving what they said was a passionate speech with Joe Biden. Here's what they said, quote, Joe Biden angrily screamed for an hour and was roundly praised for a fiery speech. Katie Britt passionately made the case on the need for a new direction and is being criticized by the liberal media. Color me surprised. And it goes without saying, of course, that these are huge stakes. It's a huge stage for any newcomer who's, in essence, a rising star in their party to give. And the optics here are, of course, really important, Erica. You know that every single mistake and misstep is usually what endures, oftentimes over the message.
Yeah, it is tough. Senlin, appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure.
Out front next, it was 10 years ago today that MH370 vanished without a trace. Well, now one country says it is considering a new search. Plus, the Pentagon out with a new report on the surge of UFO sightings. So, what did they uncover? Tonight, 10 years to the day after MH370 vanished, the Malaysian government is considering starting a new search for the missing plane. Families of the missing passengers today protesting at the Malaysian embassy in Beijing. 239 passengers and crew were on board when that plane disappeared. And a decade later, many are asking why this mystery remains so hard to solve. Richard Quest is out front.
And we
have breaking news right now. Malaysia Airlines confirms it has lost contact with a plane carrying 227 passengers and 12 crew members.
And so began one of aviation's greatest mysteries.
The plane just vanished from the radar screen. You know, we went totally dark.
The Boeing 777 took off from Kuala Lumpur on its way to Beijing. It was less than an hour into the flight when the captain said...
Good night, Malaysia. Minutes
later, the transponder stopped transmitting identification and position. Military radar and data from the pilot's cell phone revealed that the plane had changed course and was now flying back across Malaysia. And the satellite data revealed MH370 continued flying for around 7 hours when the plane likely went down off the western coast of Australia.
Flight MH370 ended in the southern Indian Ocean.
That statement extinguished whatever hope the families still had. Those families are still hoping for closure. When the plane went missing, planes,
steer 319,
ships and submarines from dozens of countries took part in the most expensive search in aviation history. And despite all these efforts, nothing was immediately found. It would be more than a year before a piece of the wing washed up on the coast of Reunion Island near Madagascar. What happened to the plane remains unclear. Some observers believe Captain Zahari deliberately crashed the plane as part of a murder-suicide. The families of the pilots harshly reject that idea. And truth is, there's little hard evidence to support it. Other nefarious theories say someone entered the cockpit and hijacked the plane. Then there are mechanical issues. Or then, perhaps, some kind of fire in the cargo hold or a sudden decompression that forced the pilots to change course before they were no longer able to control the plane or became unconscious.
At this point, the only thing we do know is that it did hit the water, that there are pieces of the airplane that washed ashore. Other than that, we have no other clues as to what actually happened.
Now a decade on, the Malaysia government says it's considering a new search. An American firm, Ocean Infinity, says new technology may allow it to find the missing aircraft after two previous searches failed.
We've spent a lot of time talking to a lot of different people. It's a question that deserves to be answered, not least just for the families, but for everybody.
10 years on, finding the plane remains crucial to bringing closure to the families of the victims.
I would have a sense of relief, I guess, that at least we know now we found something.
10 years on, and it's also important to you and me, part of the billions of people who fly every year. It's important they find the plane and they find the black boxes like this that will help them understand what finally happened to MH370. Erica?
Richard Quest, thank you as always. Finally tonight, America's X-Files. The Defense Department releasing its long-awaited report on UFOs, which claims the feds have no evidence that any of the UFO sightings dating back to the 1940s were actually from outer space, noting that most turned out to be, quote, ordinary objects and phenomena and the result of misidentification. That 63-page report goes on to say there's also no evidence the government possesses any alien technology, though even the Pentagon acknowledging tonight that this sweeping report may do little to sway skeptics who believe the government is hiding something. And while the government says it has no evidence of extraterrestrials, it's also not shutting the door on the possibility that there is life out there. In fact, we know now that the government is actually developing so-called UFO detection kits. These detection systems will be deployed to an area that, according to the government, is known for a number of sightings. There you go, on a Friday night. Thanks for joining us. AC360 starts right now.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.